Little Hand says it's time to rock and roll.
Bring the noise.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Welcome to Earth.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Bong. James Bong.
Pop quiz, hot shot.
Your move, creep.
Get off my plane.
Get your ass to Mars.
I feel mean. The name's Earth.
I'm your huckleberry.
We see we cut the Kit Kat and haul.
Hey, motherfucker.
Hello and welcome to the Everything Actioncast, the podcast for October 26, 2020. I'm your host, Zach. And just we have Chris.
Hello.
And we got a bunch of stuff to dive into this week, so let's jump right in. And actually, it was a bit of a light week for trailers. We only got one actually major trailer this week. It's a new Netflix movie coming, I believe in December. It's The Midnight Sky, which is directed by and starring George Clooney. And it's based on a sci-fi novel called Good Morning, Midnight, by Lily Brooks Dalton. But it's basically George Clooney is a scientist in the Arctic who is trying to communicate with like this crew of a spaceship that has been like on like an off-Earth mission for years. But the spaceship crew doesn't realize that like this like post-apocalyptic climate change event has occurred on Earth, and now like Earth is like this like frozen wasteland. So like Clooney's trying to like tell them like get like be ready, like Earth is like a wasteland now.
So it's kind of a Cloverfield paradox. It keeps going.
It feels like Day After Tomorrow mixed with like Gravity or something, because it looks like the space crew has to like deal with like some
space horrors,
space disaster stuff, and then Clooney is like going on his journey from like his station to like another station. So it's like very like Day After Tomorrow, like make your way through like this like apocalyptic like frozen Earth. But yeah, I mean it looks okay. I feel like Clooney directed stuff has been kind of hit or miss recently. Like I tried to like Money's Men, I thought was fun, but then like there was like I didn't see like Leatherheads or whatever that one was, and like
I remember Leatherheads. That's clearly trying to be funny, and it's a hit or miss with that.
Yeah,
but I feel like Serious Clooney is what most people are kind of used to.
Yeah, yeah. His last movie was Suburbicon, which like everyone hated that movie. So. The weird Matt Damon movie.
I forgot.
It was like in the '50s, and it was like this very
Pleasantville type movie.
Yeah, Pleasantville, but then like Pleasantville like collapses on itself, and everyone like starts like
killing each other. I kind of remember the concept. The concept sounded cool, but
yeah. Well, it was like the Coen brothers wrote it, and then Clooney directed it, but then like no, like, it was just like it got horrible reviews.
I wonder what happened. Like halfway through, it's just like it's a simulation or something where people were like.
And then like the Ides of March too. Like I don't remember.
I heard that's a mixed review. That movie isn't for everyone. It's more like it's a political thriller. So you gotta be in the mood for that. And then you gotta really be into Ryan Reynolds. I'm not Ryan Gosling.
Yeah. But then Goodnight and Good Luck is like amazing. It's like that's like an amazing movie. So
I feel like that started off the Clooney train, didn't it?
Well, his first movie he directed was Confessions of a Dangerous Mind.
That one is Sam Rockwell?
Yes, and it's about like Chuck Barris. Like,
yeah, claimed that he was an assassin.
But, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like that movie.
Mm-hmm. Clooney hasn't really done like a big like sci-fi, like like disaster blockbuster sort of thing. So I guess we'll have to see how he tackles that. And, it's going to be December 23rd on Netflix, just in time for Christmas, so you can gather the family and watch George Clooney trying to, like, survive the Arctic. Oh, and also, we should probably also mention, like, Felicity Jones, David Oyelowo, Kyle Chandler, and Damien Bashir are, like, the, like, crew on the spaceship. They're trying to, like, come back to Earth.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, also our cast besides Clooney, but, yeah, I guess keep an eye on that on Netflix if you're looking for something like like disastrous to watch around Christmas. You can check that out. So moving on to some other news. So I think last week we talked about the Animaniacs revival, which is coming next month in November to Hulu. But more the other Steven Spielberg 90s beloved classic is coming back as well. Because we learned this week that Tiny Toons is going to be an HBO Max exclusive. Tiny Toons Luniversity, where Buster and Babs and the whole gang are at the whatever the college equivalent is of Ekman Luniversity.
But that's the thing about universities. Like, doesn't that apply that it's like highest academic level, or was that just like art school? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, I guess they were like, what was like? I guess was. Like, was, like, the Tiny Toons, like, the Luniversity, was that, like, elementary school, I guess? Or, like...
And some of those, like, was everyone the same age? So I felt like they were. They varied in age.
Yeah. But now it's, like, but now they're at, like, the whatever the college equivalent is in the Looney Tunes universe. And it's got a 2-season straight series order, so we're getting a ton of Tiny Toons on HBO Max for the next couple of years here. Steven Spielberg is back to executive produce it. Like, Steven Spielberg was just like, hey, remember those cartoons I did in the 90s? Like, people like those, right? Let's bring both those back.
I'm doing that again.
Yeah, I think the only thing with this one though is like, so. We definitely know, like, the Animaniacs, like, the entire cast is back for Animaniacs. I don't know, I don't think they've really said, like, if the cast is coming back for this one.
Well, since they were technically, like, kids, it doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't, you could change the voice cast a little bit.
Yeah.
I don't know how this works for the college age now.
But, I mean, it's all, like... everyone's still around. Like, Tress MacNeille was Babs, so, I mean, she's coming back as Dot for Animaniacs, so...
And she still sounds great, so... Yeah. I imagine she would come back.
Yeah.
But I could see them, too, say that,
Charlie Adler's doing a ton of stuff still, he voice Buster, so, I mean, everyone's still here, everyone's still around, so...
Right, but I could see... there being an issue where it's like, okay, well, this is the voice cast dedicated to the Hulu, and now this is HBO Max, and we can't transfer it.
Maybe, yeah.
That's the only way. That's the only thing I could see as being like an issue later on.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully, we don't run into the weird like Muppets situation where it's just like very, very like just horribly wrong voices for everybody. but yeah, so that's coming to HBO Max, I believe sometime next year, possibly. And then the other big HBO Max news is that they're getting an exclusive new Genndy Tartakovsky show, which I believe pretty much all the current Genndy Tartakovsky stuff is already on HBO Max, like, you know, like Samurai Jack and Dexter's Lab and Powerpuff Girls and Primer are all on HBO Max already, so that's probably what led to this. But he's got a new show called Unicorn Warriors Eternal, which is gonna be it's gonna be HBO Max and Cartoon Network, so it'll probably be next day on HBO Max, or like it'll be like once the season's done on Cartoon Network, it'll be on HBO Max. But it's basically a team of like ancient teenage heroes who are kind of they went into like some sort of like cryostasis or sleep, and then they wake up and now and they have to like kind of like rediscover like being heroes in like this new world that they like awaken to.
I feel like because you didn't see Steven Universe, this is like their darker version of Steven Universe. Like, did you even see a few episodes?
No, I haven't seen any of it.
It's like colorful and it's more PG and it's really like deep later on, but it's like the idea of like warriors and they're like rediscovering their humanity and stuff. Or like learning about it now in this new space, but it's more modern, not to this post-apocalyptic future that these teens, I guess, warrior teens.
So, I guess what the thing is like, so they, it's like this like ancient group of warriors, like they like, I guess they kind of like reincarnate themselves, or like they go into like a hibernation, and then they come out and they're
like blanks.
Yeah, but they wake up too early this time, so now they're like in the bodies of teenagers or like teenage selves. Now it's like we woke up to like we're not like now we have to figure out how to like be heroes in like these like underpowered teenage bodies.
Okay, that's a little different.
And yeah, they showed like a promo art of like the main cast is like four heroes, like one of them's like a steampunk robot guy, and then there's like an elf guy, and then like a goth girl, and there's a black kid with like levitation powers. Like they don't really explain like any of the characters, like any like there's no like voice cast or anything, but it's basically just like Genndy Tartakovsky's making a new show, you're gonna watch it. which is pretty much true. So
yeah, it's par for a record.
Yeah. I feel like this one's gonna have a slightly more dialogue than Primal does.
Just a lot more less roaring.
Yeah. Yeah. So Tiny Toons and Unicorn Warriors Eternal are both coming to HBO Max in the near future. Keep your HBO Max subscription or subscribe, or and hopefully it'll be on Roku by the time these come out. Because that's still very annoying. So, moving on, we also got some news from Netflix this week that they are developing a live-action Assassin's Creed show. I guess to go alongside the Witcher.
Yeah, but like,
there's basically no information.
No demand.
Yeah, we don't know if it's going to be based on a specific game, if it's going to be an original story.
Oh boy, hope not.
If they were smart, they would base it on two. Because that's like, I mean, that's
probably... Or
like,
just the trilogy, just base it on the characters and the setting you like, and just let it go to work. Don't try to do too much.
Yeah.
Like, I don't mind the movie. I understand the concept. They're trying to cram in a lot. But they ended up being like a hodgepodge mess of like,
yeah,
no one was happy.
The movie is insane, is like bizarre and insane because like they flipped the ratio of what you would want. Like it's like 60% present day and then like 40% ancient. Yeah, and we don't want like the present day bullshit. We want like Michael Fassbender like running around like the Crusades or whatever it was like.
Yeah, it was a lot that they didn't do right.
Yeah. And then the ending of that movie made absolutely no goddamn sense at all.
What are you talking about? The future like, ghosts?
Spoiler alert, when the assassin ghost army shows up to like help Michael Fassbender. And then they do like the blatant like sequel setup that's never gonna happen.
Never gonna happen. Maybe the TV show is gonna pick up on that. Just haha.
Oh god.
You thought we left that hanging?
I hope the show has nothing to do with the movie. Just like do like have it be like more fully based on the video, like based on like one of the games specifically, like based on like based on the first game. Like, do like three seasons. Each season is based on like the first three games.
Yeah.
Or just do multiple seasons based on two, because like two is like obviously has so much stuff going on with it that you could just like you could do multiple seasons of just two.
Two or three. Three wasn't bad. It just was like
three is very mixed as far as reaction. Like two is like universally beloved. Like everyone loves two. Three is like very like people, you know, some people love it, some people hate it.
Yeah, I fall into the category of I like the story. I just didn't like the gameplay because it got too repetitive.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like homework to play that game. And then, like, the pirate one, everyone loved. Like, that was a good balance. Like, it stuck around long enough.
Yeah, like, two, Black Flag. I mean, the recent ones, like Odyssey, everyone loves.
I didn't play Odyssey. I didn't play Origins either. Mm-hmm. I took a giant break from Assassin's Creed games.
What was the Victorian London one? Was that like Unity or Brotherhood?
That one's Unity was no. Oh god, do I even have the like early England one? Unity was the one in France because that's mm-hmm. supposed to be take place the same time as like a little bit after the American Revolution or before the American Revolution. One of the revolutions, but Syndicate. Yeah, that's it. Syndicate was the
There's Rogue, Unity, Syndicate, and then Origins Odyssey.
Because at that point they changed how the game plays because it was no longer like one hit kills and stuff. It was like a point system
because
you could like attack an enemy, but if your like health isn't high enough or your power isn't high enough, it's gonna be a longer fight.
Mm-hmm.
I think they did that to pad the time, because you could, like, if you're smart about Assassin's Creed games, you could really rush through it. Like, if you plan out your routes, you plan out how you approach everything, like, you kind of find the formula, and then I think people got tired of the formula. So then they did the, beef up your character, or else you're gonna have a really hard time in combat.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe in the TV show, it's like, keep watching, then maybe the show gets better, or...
Yeah, hopefully they draw on like the success of The Witcher and just kind of be like, it's like this, but there's like weird time travel stuff.
I'm fine with that. Anthology, Assassin's Creed show and anthology premise is like awesome because I don't want like a. Now we know what happens when you try to cram a whole movie explaining the science that you don't care about, and then. They didn't really get into the sci-fi elements where it's like, oh, aliens, because that was a twist.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens next.
Mm-hmm. That's coming sometime in the near future to Netflix. No release date or anything on that one. Not even like an estimated date. They're just like, it's coming.
It'll get here when it gets here.
Yeah. So, moving over to Disney Plus, we got some pretty gigantic news from Disney Plus this week, as far as like their Marvel shows. So, Oscar Isaac is going to be starring, or apparently is in talks, or is pretty much confirmed to be starring in the Moon Knight show that's going to be on Disney Plus. He's going to be Mark Spector.
Has he always been? It's always been Mark Spector.
The only Moon Knight I know is Mark Spector, so maybe there's been like another Moon Knight, but like I feel like I think he's one of those Marvel characters that's only been like one dude
until it's too popular and they can make like three Moon Knights.
Yeah. Well, I guess the thing about Moon Knight is like it's Mark Spector, but he also has like his like. However many personalities he has, like, because he has like tons of different personalities to go along with it. So, so it's Mark Spector plus like five other guys in his brain. But Oscar Isaac is going to be starring. I guess coming back to Marvel after the disaster that was X-Men Apocalypse. So that wasn't MCU Marvel. That was Fox Marvel. But
it still wasn't bad though. Like I know some people still hate the Apocalypse movie, but I thought it was pretty good.
It's if you like schlock, I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
And there's lots of bad stuff about the Apocalypse. It's now that we've seen Dark Phoenix, though, we know it's definitely better than Dark Phoenix, but not by much.
See, yeah, better by comparison.
Yeah. But yeah. So any thoughts about Moon Knight show, or anything you want to see from Moon Knight show, Chris? Or
I do like the later, like in the last year or two, they dealt with Moon Knight with like Mark Spector's grip on reality, where there's a comic where he's just in a mental asylum.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if they're gonna play into that, like his grip on reality, and how was it like Vishnu or
Khonshu is Khonshu is Egyptian god patron who like gives him all his powers.
Yeah, his regulations are weird because it's like you can only be Moon Knight in the night.
Yeah, and his powers increase, like if it's a full moon he has full power, if it's like a new moon he has like basically no power.
Yeah, so they're going to delve into that, because that's why he didn't really stop bank robberies, but sometimes he did, and that's the Moon Knight issues I didn't understand. Because, like, who was Moon Knight's arch enemy? It's like run off of anyone else that wasn't a Spider-Man villain at the time.
Yeah, I don't think he really had, like, a, like, he kind of ran around with, like, the weird Marvel character. Like he like teamed up with like Werewolf at Night, like a bunch of like the weird characters and stuff.
Yeah, like I've seen more Moon Knight with friends than Moon Knight himself, so that's why I can't tell you more. I know he's like, it's just like the other characters, just like him and Thrasher, like Nighthawk, just like all right, like, just hanging out doing patrol. There's a really interesting reintroduction in the Ultimate Universe where he's got some personalities and you can't tell if like his powers are Egyptian or not, but then he also has like Ronin, like a version of Ronin in him.
Yeah, well he's also basically Batman because he's a millionaire and he makes himself like a Moon Knight like hover ship and like Moon Knight Batarangs basically and stuff. And
oh wait, he bought that? I thought he got that from his Egyptian god.
I mean maybe the new, like the recent one changed that, but like I know definitely 90s Moon Knight was like he was 90s Moon Knight was basically Batman.
Wow.
Like he was a millionaire who just like bought everything. but then he also was a mercenary, and then like he Khonshu gave him like resurrected him basically. But he was a millionaire from being a mercenary, so he had like this, all these millions from like being from his mercenary work. So he's just like, I'm just gonna buy like a moon ship and moon rings, and
it's like, you know what's more efficient than these moon things? A gun, but I can't because my Egyptian god said no.
Maybe, yeah.
He still has an ethic that he can kill, because he doesn't have like a.
He was a mercenary. I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure he has no problems killing people.
Oh, I'm saying that because that'd be like dark. It's like almost every, except for the Punisher for the Marvel stuff. Like they all try not to kill.
Yeah. There's many different versions of Moon Knight they could go with. Like 90s Moon Knight is a full on Batman. Like the new one is more like psychological, and like there's like it's like more stylish and is he actually crazy? Is he
right?
Does he have powers? Like definitely a bunch of different directions they could go. So. Hopefully it's good, because Moon Knight is one of my favorite characters as far as like the comics, like because I collect the comics, I definitely lean to like more toward like the weird like Ghost Rider and Moon Knight and the Midnight Suns and stuff.
No, but that's because they had a cool premise where they took on some supernatural thing. But honestly, some Marvel stories were just like, we need to sell toys. We need to try to be the next hot thing. We want to be like the trendy with something.
Yeah.
And Moon Knight was like, well, we can't have Batman, but we can make him like a sleepy Batman.
What about Egyptian Batman?
That's not copyrighted.
So, I think they were hoping to shoot this starting next month, but obviously that got kind of delayed a little bit. So, probably, I think they're probably gonna start production on this next year, and then probably maybe like a 2022 release on Disney Plus. It's probably gonna be around the same time, or like, because this, I think it's the first wave of like Disney Plus shows is gonna be like the current characters like WandaVision and Falcon and Winter Soldier and Loki and stuff, but then we're gonna get like a second wave of Disney Plus shows. It's like that is like She-Hulk, Miss Marvel, Moon Knight. So hold on to that Disney Plus subscription. So last bit of news for this week is that we got some news about The Meg 2 that's on the way. From Warner Brothers. Jason Statham's back as Jonas Taylor hunting down Big Shucks. And Ben Wheatley is going to be directing the movie, who not exactly like a blockbuster director. He's done more interesting, not like indie movies, but like more like artistic movies. Like he did like High Rise and Free Fire. Like the most recent thing he did is the Netflix reboot of Rebecca. It's like a gothic novel. Like Hitchcock did a version, and this is like a new version of the novel. But yeah, Free Fire, High Rise, Sightseers, Kill List. Like he's a very like artistic director. So it's gonna be interesting. Like it's like going from like. Yeah, like an adaptation of Rebecca to like The Meg 2. So yeah, I guess we'll have to see like what like if that like brings any like interesting like aesthetic choices or like story choices to The Meg 2.
I bet you The Meg is gonna be like all neon, and then it's gonna be a lot of slow mo.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely a lot of. Like novel material they can dive into because The Meg has 7 sequels.
Oh my god!
Yeah, so
why does it have that many?
Because the Meg the novel was like a huge like blockbuster novel, and then they skipped, like Steve Alton just kept going. Like, he's just like, all right,
just keep people, writing this.
People love giant sharks. Like I think the probably the biggest one outside of The Meg is The Trench. Where, I think he basically introduced like there was besides like the Megalodon, there's also like in the like the Mariana Trench, there's like also like lost dinosaurs like the like Kronosaurus like plesiosaurs are also down in the Mariana Trench. So that was like a big thing of like I think there was like a plesiosaur like Megalodon battle or something in the trench at one point.
I just think basically, it kind of boils down to just becoming like asylum movies eventually, just like book form. Because yeah, how many times do you fight the shark, and then it's like the shark somehow drags itself to fight like or discover other creatures. Just feel like that's gonna get into the parody sense.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, yeah, it's like The Trench, Meg, Primal Waters. Meg, Hell's Aquarium, Meg Origins, Meg Night Stalkers, Meg Generations, Meg Purgatory. So yeah, there's tons of giant shark action they can dive into. Hopefully, maybe the sequel will actually have like. they can like that, like they can have like the actual ending of the Meg that they didn't do this time, where like the original like end of the Meg, the book, is like Jason Statham's character like ends up inside the Meg, and like basically like is like, basically like cuts the Meg's heart out with a knife, and then like cuts his way out of the Meg. And okay. and then like swims out through the blood and is like, I've killed the Meg.
That's how the book ends, and the movie didn't do that.
Jason Statham just like he shot like a explosive harpoon at the Meg or something, or like shot the Meg in the eye, I think, at the end of the movie, the Meg movie. It definitely was. It definitely was not as like crazy as the end of the book. The end of the book, when I first read it, I was like, wait, what?
like out of nowhere.
Yeah. He's inside the fucking shark. So I guess keep an eye out for The Meg 2, or whatever they call it, if they're gonna base on The Trench or some one of the other novels, just an original story. But we're gonna see Jason Statham fight a giant shark or some other prehistoric monster in the near future. So that's exciting. I wonder if this new one will be as China centric as the first one.
Oh man, like that whole facility, the staff workers.
The Chinese like beach that like is apparently like a very popular beach for Chinese people. That was like the Meg attacked. But I guess we'll wait for some more info and see exactly what they're doing with that. So that's it for news this week. So I jump into show and tell. And, Chris, you and I watched A Nightmare on Elm Street for the latest Everything Action commentary. It's up on the site right now.
And it was interesting.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's still great. It's definitely interesting watching the first one, knowing, like, how the series goes. Because, like, the first one, like, it's not, it's like, 80% to, like, where it, like, it eventually would get to, like, but like Freddy's not—he's not quite Freddy yet. Like he's just barely not Freddy yet.
Yeah, he's not the classic '80s wacky Freddy. He's like a serious Freddy first.
Yeah. He does a lot of like silent like just like intimidation stuff, like, and like, and like a lot, like we discovered like a lot of like weird like body mutilation stuff himself. Like that's his big like scare tactic in this one is like cutting off his fingers, like cutting his like stomach open, and like maggots come out, and it's like he's just like, ah, look at that, that's weird, right?
Yeah, no reason besides the shock, but it really doesn't really show. He doesn't even say anything, he just does it, like, hey, yeah, hey, like that. I think that is the worst part. It's just like he does this to shock you, but maybe because we're desensitized, we're just like, okay. You know, like we're just like, that sucks for you, Freddy.
Yeah, he doesn't his one-liner game is not on par yet. Like he hasn't quite developed like his wit yet.
Which is fine, because it's the first movie, so they need to figure it out. They're still like discovering Freddy, and they don't call him Freddy Krueger, right? They just kind of call him like Fred.
He's credited as Fred Krueger, but then people like they just call him Freddy. All the parents call him Fred. And like his hat, like it's apparently his hat says Fred Krueger, because like Nancy pulls out his hat and is like, it says Fred Krueger on it, Mom. And then Nancy's mom just like grabs a vodka from like the like linen closet and chucks it. Which that was another thing, like, man, Nancy's mom just like, who knows how much vodka is in that house? Just like,
yeah, that's just the vodka like she found that day. That woman is just drinking unmarked vodka for her morning, afternoon, night. And I can't tell if that's because of the divorce or that's because she feels guilty about Fred Krueger. We don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, she has a breakdown, but but that could just be from everyone kind of going to going crazy in this town. So that just isolated to one thing.
But yeah, I mean, still like there's so much like iconic like imagery in the first one though. Like the like Freddy coming through like kind of like pushing out the rubber kind of plastic wall part. And obviously, like the Johnny Depp bed death, that's amazing, and like the Tina like rotating room kill.
That's impressive. That's early in the movie.
Yeah, which is also like a weird like, especially knowing the future of the franchise, it's like the weird like, oh, Tina's the main character. Everybody, right? Like we're following Tina, like because we start the movie with Tina, and then. Like, we were trying to figure out, like, were they trying to do, like, a Psycho where it's like, oh, you think you're following Tina, but it's really, like, but then it's like, oh, no, Nancy's the main character, guys.
Well, the, I think, like, intentionally was to throw you off because it was to show that, like, anyone in the circle could be affected.
Yeah.
The strange part was, did everyone's are these the kids from the all those parents that killed Fred Krueger? Like we definitely know like Nancy's parents did.
Yeah.
Or at least the mom did.
Mm-hmm.
The dad doesn't seem to care.
Yeah, I don't know. Like we I don't think we ever know like if like any of their parents like were like, the vigilante mob that killed Freddy. Glenn's parents don't seem like they would be part of a vigilante mob. Tina's mom's never there, so.
Yeah, that's the part I'm just like figuring out is like, did the whole town do this? Because it seems like they straight up forgot this, so they swore not to talk about this.
Yeah. Well, you'll have to watch the Freddy's Nightmares episode 1 that's also on the site that like it goes into the backstory and like shows Freddy's trial and like his death at the hands of the vigilante parents. Which fun fact about that episode, I didn't realize that I posted it on the site this week, but apparently Toby Hooper directed that episode. The first episode of Freddy's Nightmares is directed by Toby Hooper.
Mm.
And you get to see like a lot of like really like strange like unburned Freddy, so it's like Robert Englund but like no burns, no makeup on, but still in like the Freddy costume. So that's kind of worth watching that episode just for that, just to see like unburned Freddy. But then that show turned just like schlocky nonsense basically after that episode aired. Like the first episode is like a kind of like interesting addition to like the like canon of Nightmare on Elm Street, and the rest of the episodes are just like excuses just to have like Robert Englund like play electric guitar or like do like wacky like Freddy hijinks.
I mean, the idea seems fun.
Yeah.
It's a follow up that took more time.
Yeah, it was basically just like let Freddy be the Crypt Keeper from Tales from the Crypt before Tales from the Crypt started.
I just feel like the momentum was like how do you keep up the momentum of the TV show without trying to put more thought into the movies and not try to overlay so much.
Mm-hmm. But you can go head over to everythingaction.com right now. You can sync up the commentary and watch the original Nightmare on Elm Street with us, and you can also watch that Freddy's Nightmare episode. So if you want some Nightmare on Elm Street stuff to watch for Halloween this weekend, head over and check both those out. And then besides Elm Street, Chris, did you watch anything else this past week?
Yeah, I finally watched the Happy Time Murders.
Okay.
It wasn't that bad.
It got reamed.
Yeah, it got destroyed in the movie theaters. I thought it was going to be way worse than it was. But maybe either I just like fart jokes a lot, or it is just like people wanted it to be the next Ted, and they didn't get that. But The Happy Time Murders isn't a bad movie. it's just very lowbrow. It's very, it doesn't get any worse or better once it kind of lays the tone. There's not any surprises. The jokes are very, like, fart jokey. They're not clever. But, you know, that's, I was in the mood for it. I was in the mood to see just, like, very immature puppetry. And that's exactly what it is. If you expect it to be very clever about it, if you think it's going to be, you know, a twist on it, it isn't. It's a very by-the-numbers story, and I think that's what happened. But to some people are mad about that, like, way more mad than I expected. Or people expect it. This movie didn't claim to be, like, it's going to change, like, what people think about adult puppets. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, people really thought this was the worst movie ever made in, like, 2018. That or 2018 was just, like, a good year in movies, and this is the only movie that just didn't do well.
I think like the because it had like the it was like the Hens, like it has the Henson name on it, so people, I think there's like way much higher expectations.
I mean, technically it does, but I think the Henson company kind of like blacklisted this movie, didn't it? Or they just said, oh yeah, we had a hand, but not really.
It's like Jim Henson's son, I think.
Yeah.
Is like, mm-hmm. Did he direct it? Or yeah, Brian Henson, he directed it, so.
Well, it's like, yeah, and then some of the, you know, Muppet crew people worked on this, but you could see their quality. But I didn't think they actually slapped their name on it, because they really try not to do a brand association, because they kind of knew, like, halfway, I think at the end, they knew this wasn't going to be a hit, so they kind of did a back out thing where,
yeah,
they try not to associate so many things with it.
Mm-hmm.
But other parts are still fun, you know, like Miss Melissa McCarthy, like, she's pretty fun. She gets better in the movie. Like, she's the only thing I liked. Like, in her story, it's fun. Did you see the movie?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
Okay, like, she starts off as the straight edge person, but then it's revealed more and more how, like, wacky she is. And then I guess the one part is that people didn't know what to think of her, because she doesn't get too crazy. And she plays both the crazy person and the straight person. So you get kind of a mix. And I think the marketing heavily relied on her, but it really isn't about just her. It's her and her partner. And the marketing did not really show how much the partner was, besides the one, like, the sex scene that they show in the trailer all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the voice actor for the main puppet name is Phil Phillips. He's just a puppeteer guy. He's an actor, but he's not anyone famous, so I guess people didn't know who the hell he is, because the guy's name is Bill Beretta. He's the voice of I think Rizzo. Yeah, no, so he's Pepe the Prawn.
Yeah.
And then Bobo the Bear, and then he was Swedish. He also plays Swedish Chef in the later era of the Muppet stuff. So he's like more of a Muppets, you know, guy first.
Yeah.
And when he's doing his role of like a detective or an ex-detective, or now a private detective, named Phil Phillips. It comes off weird. Like, cause it's just like, he's not a celebrity name. So it's like, okay, it's just like someone you only know if you really are into the Muppets. And then the cameos are very far and few. There's a few people that I'm just like, oh, is that who I think it is? No, that's not. It's just another puppeteer. Is this another actor? Nope, no, it's another puppeteer. Like, you know, I think, like, if this had more of an all-star cast, it would have marketed better. But because they went very limited, and you could tell they got limited on the certain budgets. Because I also imagine making these puppet movies ain't cheap. It's a lot of green screen they got to, like, blend together.
Oh yeah, I think that's like one of the like issues, like the when it failed at the box office, you're just like, well, no, we're not, no one's making like giant blockbuster Muppet movies anymore.
Yeah, I just think because in order to make it more what the Muppets Disney movie did, the one where it's like most wanted and all that, like that required Disney money, and because Disney didn't give them the money for this, or you know, give them their giant paid their check for this, they see the quality suffer on that. But it's not bad. Like, there's some things that they just make it kind of fun because of that. And I feel like there's certain scenes that they do well to set up the puppetry in order for it to make sense, where it's like, oh, they'll like have a character sit down. There's a reason why certain characters are like stuck behind tables and stuff. It's like, oh, it's like this and this. It's like, okay, so it's easy to puppet the scene. And I like that creativity. Mm-hmm. But then other scenes, I'm just like, oh, they could have gone further. Like, it, there's a lot of, so drugs in this world is sugar, because Muppets, like these puppets, which they call them puppets. And so let me go back to, so this movie plays in that Muppets principle where it just puppets are a thing. They're like second class citizens almost, but not, you know, like they're just like, oh, well, this person's a person, this person's a human, this person's a puppet. Like, okay. But puppets can't have like big roles in society because it's like no one can trust each other. Like they tolerate puppets, but they don't trust puppets. Mm-hmm. So Phil Phillips is the first puppet cop. And in the beginning, it's shown that like he's an ex-cop. But as the movie goes on, I explain what happened to him. And it's because like he didn't shoot this one criminal correctly. Like he missed. And so because of that, they made something called the Phil Phillips Code, where puppets can't be a cop because of him, his one action. It was just like deemed really terrible, even though it's not that bad. But for some reason, it's just like, oh, that's why puppets can't be cops. You're like you're the last puppet cop. It's not played up correctly. I think that's the problem, because they bring it up more of a comical thing. And then it really doesn't, they don't spend enough time on it. And they just kind of, they just set it up to establish why he is this way. And then that's it. It's just like, okay. And does it come, it comes back full circle later, but it kind of felt forced. It kind of felt like rushed. I also didn't know Elizabeth Banks was in this movie.
I think I remember seeing that in like trailer possibly or something.
Maybe it's just, I was surprised. I was like, oh, she's in this. Cause if you see like the poster, it's just like, it's just Melissa McCarthy, so I just like forgot Elizabeth Banks in this.
And like Joel McHale's like an FBI agent or something.
He's like in this movie for like 10 minutes or less.
Yeah.
Same thing with Leslie Dave Barker. You know, another actor who post Office is not really.
Yes, Stanley from The Office.
He's just Stanley, yeah. Honestly, it's again, because it's mediocre, it's hard to like. Hard to say there's what a funny moment it is. It's just more like, haha, did you catch that? Okay, that's silly.
Yeah.
Like, I guess the best part is they talk about how, like, sugar works on these puppets, or because, like, they can't tolerate so much human stuff. Like, sugar is their vice. Mm-hmm. So they're like, trade. Like, their crack cocaine is sugar. And so these puppets are strung out in sugar. So they're, like, trying to investigate this crime, this murder that's happening when these puppets from a kids TV show are being killed off. And that's the show is called The Happy Time. So after like one or two murders, they start calling these the Happy Time murders. I don't know if that's like a clever name, but you know, I felt like that was like, they just kind of like started with that going, whoa, man, how to make this movie make sense around this title. So yeah, it's like very mediocre. it's a fun addition to watch if you love the Muppets movies and want to see just like another darker take, like a very dark take. But it's nothing where it's like mind blowing and it's gonna change your view of puppets.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna be getting it soon from my physical Netflix queue. So
I'm surprised this isn't streaming.
It's somewhere. I think it's why I had it on my like Netflix like DVD like Blu-ray queue, because it's like it's not any like it wasn't anywhere to like actually watch it.
Wow, they try hard to like block this movie, I guess.
Oh, it's on Showtime, so if you have Showtime, you can watch it. But
so, or I don't
Fubo.
Know.
Yeah, Fubo, oh, man. Fubo.
So that's the thing. I would say this movie deserves way more views because it's like not as bad as you think it is. But just the idea and the world and the potential is more devastating to me. Like that hurts more, where it's like, I just wish it was like just so many fun ideas, and it tries to play it too safe, I think. they could have really went crazy. The puppetry is really good. The concept is funny. The world is like, you know, they establish enough of the rules where it's like, oh, I get it. But then it's like, why don't they just show more of this? And they give you like a little teasers of like there's one part where it's like this octopus is milking a cow and in a sexual way. And it's like, that's as sexual as it gets.
Which is weird, because like they had the R rating and they could do like whatever they wanted, basically. So
and they didn't. They really kept it. Like, I think Ted is way more graphic in tone and stuff than it is. And I mean, like in certain sexual things than this. And the violence is very laughable because it's all like whenever like a puppet gets shot, it's just like stuffing. It really is more comedy of the dialogue. It's not like physical comedy. It's not a lot of funny puppets. That's just like, you know, something inside of horror. It's just like, oh my God. It's like, it just played it safe. But I think that's what they knew. Like, okay, we're going to get that. We're going to get people in with a concept. And then once this takes off as a franchise, we'll get more. We'll do like the crazier things. It's just, they didn't get that far. So I don't know. I feel like this is going to definitely put adult puppet movies back in the afterburners now.
Yeah. Anything else, Chris? Or?
Yeah, that's about it. Oh, I finally finished season 3 of Stranger Things. Like, I burned through all of it to get ready for season 4 that, you know, may or may not be filming.
I think they're working on it. It'll probably be next year sometime. Yeah, season 3 was definitely a pretty, like it definitely was better than season 2. Because season 2 was just kind of weird, and, like, especially toward the end. But, like, 3 was pretty, like, strong from the start, strong for the whole. Like, I think it was, it was more focused, and it had a much better, like, kind of, like, threat, and, like the villain turn and stuff. Cause 2 was just like, oh wait, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing now? Like the portal's still open or something? And then 3 was just like, oh, here's like this, here's the threat, and it's pretty crazy and pretty dangerous, and we're just gonna focus on that for the whole season.
Yeah, I can see that. I feel like this was a they centralized the story, and there was not a lot of filler. Where the prior season, just like, hey, we gotta kill time. We want to just have like a random episode about something stupid.
Want to go to Chicago for an episode?
I forgot that. I forgot how much that doesn't just apply to much.
Yeah, two really scattered everybody. Like everyone got like really scattered in season 2. Like everyone was just like really off doing their own thing. And three was definitely had like everyone was like more together more and like working on everything together more. And it was still in town. Like it wasn't like people were like traveling off to like other cities or other places much to like do stuff. And and then definitely looking forward to season 4 whenever that happens. See how they resolve the cliffhanger.
I mean, we kind of know certain cliffhangers.
Yeah. They like the cliffhanger that like the question is answered and the cliffhanger leaves. And it'll be interesting too, like if like season 4 is like in if the like cuz like people moved away at the end of season 3, so like it's like is it gonna be in a new city or a new town, and then like they come back, or is it like, totally in a new like town? Are they gonna go to Russia? Like,
I guess so.
Maybe. Is it turned to Rocky 4? So I guess as far as what I've been watching, I actually watched something kind of similar to Happy Time Murders. It was like another movie that failed horribly at the box office, but it's it's probably better than like people like, or like I expect it to be and like people expect it to be. I watched Pride and Prejudice and Zombies. Do you remember that came out, Chris?
Yeah, it was like really quick to like
2016 it came out.
I thought it came out older, longer ago.
Yeah. It got very mixed reviews. It failed horribly at the box office. It came out and then it's gone in like it felt like it was like in theaters for like a week and then it disappeared because it did so bad. But and then obviously based on the book that came out, like the Quirk book, I think from like Seth Graham Smith, which was so he did that and he did Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, which I think the interesting thing for me is that like as far as the books go, like I definitely like love like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter like much more than like Pride and Prejudice Zombies. Like I bought both and read both. Pride and Prejudice Zombies the book is like there's definitely like there's fun zombie stuff in it, but it's also like 70% still just Pride and Prejudice like uncut Pride and Prejudice. So it's just like I'm not a Jane Austen person, so I'm just like, all right, this is can we get to the zombie stuff soon? Because like I'm not really a fan of the comedy of manners or whatever this is.
It's like, you didn't like the love story and how hard it was to be a girl back then.
Yeah, but then Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter, like the book is like fantastic. It's like a really great biography of Abraham Lincoln mixed with like the crazy vampire stuff. But then movie wise, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies is like much, much better than Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter the movie. The Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter movie is so terrible.
It has moments.
It has like one good moment, like the one fight that they always show in the trailer where like the slow mo like axe fight
is axe
like,
fight,
the, only,
yeah.
the only good part of that movie.
And that's like 20 minutes in.
It's like an hour in. That's like the last really? Like it's like the big like finale. It's like
oh the train one?
Well, it's like he go like because like the main evil vampire of like Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter is like he lives in like the South in like Louisiana or something. So like it's like Abraham Lincoln goes to like his like manor house and then like fights him. Or I think that might be like the kind of like a middle second act fight or something, because like I think he thinks he killed like the main villain but he doesn't, and then like then it like ends up with like when he's president he's like had like the final battle with him or something. I don't know. It's been forever.
It's been a while.
So I have no desire to see it again. But it's been like years since I saw it. So
I paid money to see that in theaters.
Yeah. I just remember there was like a part where like a vampire is like throwing horses at Abe Lincoln, and Abe Lincoln is just like getting hit by them and surviving and like just getting up and like keep going. And I'm just like, what the fuck is this?
That's the first part of the movie.
Yeah.
But like just because he got trained by the other vampire, he's able to just like,
yeah,
do better. I don't know. It was weird. It was like he became Blade, sort of.
Yeah. But So Abe Lincoln Vampire Hunter movie, not good. Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, pretty good. It's a fun like zombie movie, mixed with it has like all the like kind of like Jane Austen-y Downton Abbey sort of like it's got like all the like kind of like the I don't is it Victorian era I guess or like Regency era I guess of England where it's like it has like the Regency era like romantic drama but then now that there's zombies there's like crazy zombie fighting and like all sorts of like stuff going on too, and like there's a lot of fun kind of like world building flourishes in it where like all the like noble like all the like, kind of like rich families like send their like children off to Japan and China to like train in martial arts now because there's zombies, so like all like the Bennett sisters are like China like they have Chinese martial arts skills now, like sword skills, and like they're like super competent warriors, but then they're also like they need to find a husband to get married. They need to find like a proper husband to get married to. So it's a pretty fun mashup of like the like a typical like Jane Austen like dilemmas mixed with like fighting like crazy zombie fights.
Okay. I feel like if you're a fan of both, it was great, but if you're a fan of one, you're still like, oh, this is a lot of other parts I don't want to see.
Yeah. I don't know, like, I think I know, like, it does follow, like, the basic, like, a lot of the plot beats are similar to, like if this is just Pride and Prejudice without zombies in it, like a lot of the beats are similar, but then they change them to, like, match, like, the zombiness of it. So it's, like, you know, just, it's still, like Lizzie Bennett and Mr. Darcy, but Darcy's, like, a, like, hardened, like, zombie colonel, like, zombie fighting colonel now. And there's, like, this whole, like, sub, like, this, kind of the main plot, besides, like, all the like, like, a relationship drama, is that there's mysterious leader of this, like, this is like, kind of, like, helping the zombies kind of, like, form, build up better tactics, and they're threatening, like, to, like, invade London.
Wait, they're smart zombies?
Yeah, well, that's another, like, fun, interesting thing about it, is, like, so, these zombies in, like, this, like, in Pride and Prejudice zombies, like, they keep their intelligence until they eat brains for the first time, and then if they eat brains, then they turn to, like, full on, like, Romero zombies. But, like, if they don't eat like human brains, then they're still, like, decomposing and, like, rotting away, but they have, like, their intelligence and personality still. So there's it's more of like a disease, and then but if they eat, like, human brains, and they turn to, like, full on just, like, monsters. But there's a kind of conflict of, like, Jack Houston, who I think is on Fargo right now. He's one of the characters in Fargo, but, like, he's, like, this, like, army colonel who is, like, he's secretly kind of, like, been, like, talking to the zombies, and, like, like, his plan is, like, oh, we need to come up with, like, a peace treaty with them so live in harmony with the zombies. Because, like, as long as they don't eat human brains, like, they're still intelligent. We can still, like, reason with them.
So it's like Daybreakers, except...
Kinda, yeah. There's, like, a little bit of Daybreaker stuff going on there.
All right. Is that in the book?
I believe it's in the book. I think that's part of the book. Is, like, they find out the Bennett sisters, and, like, everyone is like. When the book starts off, and, like, when the movie starts off, they're like, oh, we have to kill, as soon as we see a zombie, you have to kill it, because, like, they're, like, brainless monsters, and we have to, like, kill them. I think there's also a class thing going on, like, class commentary too, because, like, all the zombies are like servants and, like, kind of, like, the poorer people in England, and, like, then, like, all the, like, rich people are, like, because they can afford to, like, to go to, like, China and get martial arts training, and, like, they're not turning to zombies. Like, but all, like, the lower class, like, poorer people are turning to zombies. So there's a classism thing going on too. But yeah, it's fun. There's a bunch of fun actors showing up. Like, Charles Dance is Mr. Bennett, who is, like, he does not give a shit about them, like, marrying people. Like, he just wants to make sure, like, they're able to fight zombies and, like, survive. And then, like, his wife is, like, so it's, like, constantly, like, Charles Dance and his wife are just kind of, like, arguing each other about, like, because his wife is, like, very, like, we need to marry these girls off. They need to find proper husbands. And he's just, like, I don't care. Like, this is, can they fight with us? They got trained in, like, are they doing their sword training?
Yeah, it's like, in this world, marriage is still, like, important, and the zombie apocalyptic world.
Yeah. And there's also a fun, like, Game of Thrones, like, thing, because, like, Lena Headey's also in the movie. Is, like, she's, like, this, like, badass, like, eye patch, like, noblewoman. Who's like Mr. Darcy's aunt. But she's like this, like, very famous, like, she's, like, this, like, legendary, like, zombie killer. So it's like, yeah, it's like House Lannister's representing in Pride and Prejudice Zombies.
Interesting.
Yeah, Matt Smith shows up. Yeah, Lily James is Lizzie Bennett, and she's pretty great in it. So yeah, it's fun. If you're looking for, like, a different kind of, like, spin on zombies, I would say give it a shot, because It definitely came out, failed horribly, and then got forgotten. But yeah, if you're into like zombies or Jane Austen or both,
I feel like it's like underappreciated.
Yeah,
horror movie, comedy horror, because it doesn't take itself serious. It seems
no.
I think the marketing though, I remember it tried to be serious, and people were just like, "What is this?"
I feel like neither side really overpowers the other side. So like, if you're not a huge Jane Austen fan, like it's not like completely Jane Austen. But if you're not a huge zombie fan, it's like there's enough like Jane Austen-y stuff in there as well. So it's like I think it's a good balance of both in it. So
I mean, they're not making any more Jane Austen books. So what are you gonna do?
Yeah. I think there was like another. I think there was like something with like sea monsters. I think there's like a. Like Seth Graham Smith started to make like another like it was like
Cthulhu.
Yeah, it's some sort of like Cthulhu or like it was basically like a follow up to like Pride and Prejudice Zombies, and like I don't think it did as well. Or I think someone tried to like rip off Pride and Prejudice Zombies, and then like it was like a different like it was like something in like sea monsters or something, but I can't remember what it was. But yeah, check out Pride Prejudice Zombies is definitely better than you might think it is, just based on its like box office performance or critical reception. And then I saw a couple of more recent movies, which actually both weirdly had kind of similar themes about like where like the, or like kind of like similar like things where like the daughters kind of steal the show from their dads. So I finally saw Bill and Ted Face the Music.
Oh, okay.
Which during Prime Day, like a couple weeks ago, the rental price dropped from like $20 to rent it to $10 to rent it. So I was like, all right, that's like the price of a ticket. I'll bite the bullet and finally watch this. So obviously the third Bill and Ted movie. Everyone's back. Keanu's back. Alex Winter's back. William Sadler's back. And basically the premise is that, which I mean, obviously everyone's probably seen the show, but like basically Bill and Ted have, it's been like however 25 years since the last one. So like, it's been like however long it's been since Bogus Journey. Like they still have not come up with like the song that's supposed to like unite the universe and save the galaxy or whatnot. But basically they find out if they don't figure out the song by like a certain, like it's like because like Kristen Schaal shows up in the future and she's like Rufus's daughter, and she's like, oh, if you guys don't come up with the song by like 7:17 tonight, then the like universe is gonna like implode at itself and be destroyed.
Oh jeez.
So basically Bill and Ted basically go to the future and they're like, oh, like you have to like stay here, figure out the song, and then go back and like perform the song and then save the universe. And then like so they basically come up with the idea of like, oh, what if we went in the future or like and like stole like took the song from our, because in the future we probably wrote the song, so let's go in the future and like steal it from ourselves. So basically Bill and Ted's plot is like basically they keep going like further and further into the future to see like, and like each time they go for like in the future, it gets worse and worse for them. Like each version of themselves in the future is just like more pathetic and worse than like the last one.
Is that alternate versions of it's like literally like future versions of themselves that get worse?
It's like they jump like 5 years in the future, and then they jump like 10 years in the future, and so they keep like jumping into the future, and it's just like that version of Bill and Ted just gets like worse. Like they get like more and more like their wives left them, their daughters left them, they're in prison. Like it just gets it gets worse and worse, and they still haven't written the song. So like it's like Bill and Ted are just like, how are we gonna figure out what the song is? And then kind of the secondary side plot that's like also kind of it gets as much equal time as like the main plot of Bill and Ted, is that Bill and Ted's daughters, Billy and Theo, who Samara Weaving is Bill's daughter, and then what's her name? Apparently, I think she's like a British actress, but she's been like, but Oh, Bridget Lundy Payne, who has been in, like, what was she, like, she was in, like, Atypical, like, I think it was, like, Netflix show and stuff. Okay. But, yeah, she is Ted's daughter, and they both do, like, an amazing job of, like they do, like, perfect, like, impressions slash, like, just, like, acting like Bill and Ted. Like, they, like, they're, like, and, like, they're obsessed with music, and so they have, like, encyclopedic knowledge of, like, all music, basically. Because basically all they do is just, like, listen to music all day and, like, not do anything else.
Yeah, but, I guess their fathers just raised them on music.
Yeah, but basically, they decide, like, oh, we need to help our dads. So they take Christian Schall's time machine, and they basically, like, go and, like, assemble, like, they basically go on, like, a mini version of, like, the first movie, and they basically travel through time, and, like, they're, like, gathering, like, an all-star team of, like, musicians to, like, help their dad. So it's, like, Jimi Hendrix, Louis Armstrong, Mozart, like, and a bunch of other people. And then that's what they're doing while their dads are, like, trying to, like, find the song that they need to play. And then, yeah, a bunch of fun stuff. Like, there's a great bit with, like, Anthony Carrigan from Barry is, like, this evil, like, this, like, basically a Terminator robot. But then you find out that he's, like, this, like they do this, like, great setup where it's, like, he's, like, very, like, it's just, like silent, like, he's, like, he starts with, like, the Terminator, like, he's silent, like, intimidating robot. And then you find out, like, every time he kills someone, he just, like, you find out he's, like, very neurotic, and, like, and he's just like, oh man, I'm so sorry, I didn't mean to do that. And just, like, and then, like, he's like later on, like later in the movie, like, he just has, like, a full, like, identity crisis slash, like, mental breakdown. We're just like, who am I? What is my name? My name's Dennis. But yeah, it's a ton of fun. Pretty much what you would want from, like, a Bill and Ted sequel. Like, they didn't screw it up. Like, it's a fun Bill and Ted sequel. Like, Keanu Reeves and Alex Winter are both, like, they both, like, just, like, completely, like, re-step into the roles. Like it was, like, without any issues or anything. And there's, like, a twist at the end, which I predicted, like as soon as they start, like, saying something, like, they keep saying it something in a certain way, and you're just like, I was like, oh, okay, I know what they're doing.
They're foreshadowing it, like, heavily.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, it's very sweet and funny, and definitely, if you're a Bill and Ted fan, it's definitely worth checking out. It's definitely rent that, or wait, I mean. I don't think it's worth $20, but I mean, it's definitely worth 10. Or if you want to wait until it's, like, whatever, like, the normal rental price is, I think, because it's still, like, premium video on demand for some reason, even though it's been out for, like, months. But definitely worth seeing at some point. And then, since I had rented it from Prime Video, I also watched Borat 2, aka Borat subsequent movie film. Which was also pretty great. I don't know if it's as good as the first one. I probably need to watch it, like, a couple times. Like, cause I don't know if it has, like, the, like, you know, like, the quotable lines as much, or, like, if it, or it definitely doesn't have the same impact as the first one, like because everyone knows at this point, like, Borat, like, they know, like, Sacha Baron Cohen stuff and everything, so it doesn't have the like, massive impact of, like, what the hell is this? Like,
I could sense that. I feel like it's playing up to a character you now know, where before it was, like, a shocking introduction. It's like, you didn't know where it can go, but now you're expecting it again.
Yeah. And it's definitely very much a 2020 movie. Like, it's pretty much just, like, a commentary. It's like the South Park pandemic special, where it's just, like, it's just basically commenting on everything that's happening this year. Like, it's, like, coronavirus, the election, all pretty much any other, like, news stuff that's happening, like, this year. Like, it's pretty much like Boris dealing with when he, like, comes back to America.
I feel, but, like, it's a movie that they had a ride on the world still being shitty. Because imagine if this movie came out and it's like, oh, it's actually cleared up since then. It's like, oh, 2020 is a wacky time.
Yeah. But basically, the setup is that because of the first movie, Borat's been in prison in Kazakhstan because Kazakhstan like hate him and they hate that they made like that he made like their country like a joke to the rest of the world.
They still do. Yeah, it's a real thing.
Well, I think they've kind of embraced like they embraced it now because like they put out a new like tourism video recently where like the slogan was like very nice. So
that's new though. That's like...
yeah. Very recently they've like kind of like I think they've accepted it. They're like, oh, we're the Borat country, so we just accept it. But in the movie universe, he's been in jail, but basically they like. Some sort of minister, I forget what exactly, like Minister of the Interior or some sort of minister, like one of the like Kazakhstan government ministers is like, we'll release you if you deliver a because you know about America, if you deliver like this gift to like the American regime, we'll release you and you won't get executed. And at first, his mission is to deliver Johnny the Monkey. Who is like he's the minister of arts and culture for Kazakhstan, but he's a literal monkey. and I think it's like the joke is also like it's like where it's like he's our minister of arts and culture and also our number one porn star. But yeah, like basically like his mission is to like deliver Johnny the Monkey to like someone high up in the, like the American government. But then right before he leaves, like he finds out that he has a daughter named Tutar, and then pretty sure, basically like this is like the first like 10-15 minutes of the movie. But like basically, as soon as the boy gets to like America, he finds out that like Tutar snuck into like the crate that Johnny was in, ate Johnny on the way to like America, and now like Borat has no one to deliver to like the American government. Oh, but then the government's like, oh, if you deliver your daughter as like a wife bribe, then like they'll be fine. So that's basically like the whole premise of the movie is like Borat trying to like get his daughter ready to like be like a bribe to like, well, at first they try to like deliver her to Mike Pence, but that didn't work out. So then it's like, oh, we'll try to like deliver her to like someone else, I guess. But yeah, it's like. Maria Bakalova, who plays Tutar, is amazing in this movie. Like she is just as like fearless and like as like in, like just like full like full committed as like Sacha Baron Cohen. Like is like she's like as equal. Like she's like right at his level. Like they have like such great like back and forth and like tag team. But it's like make just like tag teaming like and like making people just like horribly uncomfortable or like just like or like just like destroying people. And there's. Even though it's not quite as good as the first one, like there's still like some like just fantastic. There's a sequence where like they go to like a debutante ball in the South, and like there's like basically like, what happens there is like I was like dying laughing. It was so freaking just like it was like so insane of what happens at that, and then like there's like I think it's in the trailer, but there's a part where like they go to like an abortion clinic.
Oh boy!
But the whole this fantastic setup where like they go there because they're going to before they go to like the abortion clinic they go to like or like this like whatever clinic it is. Like Borat like buys like Tutar like this cupcake with like a plastic baby on it, and then she actually eats the baby. And that's why they go to this like clinic and they're like, oh, she has a baby inside of her. And then it's like, oh, but it's not alive. And it's like, yeah. And then the guy's like, yeah, it is. It's like, no, it's not. It's not alive. It's like, yeah, it is. Because they never tell the guy it's a plastic doll. They just keep saying like, oh, it's a baby. And then and Borat's like, I want to give my daughter pleasure, and I gave her a baby.
Oh boy.
So yeah, that's great. Tons of great stuff. Lots of classic Borat stuff. Although there's another gimmick in the movie where like because Borat's so recognizable in America now because of the first movie, like, he has to, like, go undercover with, like, other disguises. So it's like, it's Sacha Baron Cohen as Borat, but Borat is in disguise as someone else.
I did see a photo of what he looks like as, like, a reporter or something, and he's just, like, just looks terrible. Looks like Party City makeup on top of Borat.
Well, I think he literally goes to, like, a costume shop in the beginning of the movie and just, like, I need a disguise.
I was like, it's something to do for that. I just know. Yeah.
He buys a muscle man, like, Halloween costume, like a bunch of like just like random Halloween costumes. But yeah, it's definitely like they lean into like the like LAG kind of like a multiple personality thing to like kind of like because that was definitely like an issue like trying to like make a new Borat movie. It's like everyone in America knows who Borat is, basically. I think they somehow found people who like did not know who Borat was still somehow, even though
the first off the grid.
Yeah, like off the grid people. I think it was pretty rare to find those. Like it was just like a lot of the movies like Borat undercover in like some other disguise, and then trying to do a horrible American accent and like and failing horribly at it. Like he's clearly not an American, but he's like dressed like a stereotypical American guy, but he's just doing his normal like Borat accent. It's just like, hey, it's just me. I'm an American. I'm an American guy.
And there's got to be people who are just like, okay, I'm not gonna judge, but I can't wait to see some radical shit to you.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, there's like a great bit where like he keeps going because the only way like he can like talk to like the minister in Kazakhstan is like. Where he has to fax them, but he thinks like there's only one fax machine in America, so he keeps no matter where he is, he drives back to, like this one fax shop, and like the guy is like constantly like send like these like messages back for Borat. So like when he gets there, the guy's like, what's the message you want to fax? And Borat's just like, sup. S-U-P, sup. and then they fax it, and then they wait, like, 5 minutes, and then the minister faxes back, and the minister fax back, sup. So they have, like, this insane fax conversation. It's just, Borat's just, like, chillin'. send back chillin'. Oh, and there's a great... But, like there's also a great bit where like Borat does get like he gets like a smartphone at one point, but it's a great bit in the phone store where he's like learning like, wait, you can search for anything on this thing, and then he accidentally pulls up porn, and like the phone's like pulled up to like a big TV in the store, so you like see like what is on the like what you're doing on the phone.
Oh,
and then, and he's just like, oh, let me, I need to go in the back with this and the send and the try some other things. He goes in the back of the store. Yeah, and then you just see him like typing like tall American man with big black woman. And the guy's just sort of like, I think he's figuring it out.
He's learning.
Yeah. So yeah, it's hilarious. It's definitely if you're a fan of like Sacha Baron Cohen stuff and you like the first one, it's definitely worth watching. It might not be as timeless as the first one. It might not be as it definitely doesn't have the same impact as the first one. But like there's tons of just like hilarious like I was dying laughing things in it. So definitely worth checking out on Amazon if you haven't seen it yet. So that's it for me this week. So we wrap things up. Definitely head over to the site. We've got, like we mentioned, we got the Nightmare on Elm Street commentary. You can listen to that along with us right now. You can watch the first episode of Freddy's Nightmares. We're gonna have a game. By the time you're hearing this, there should be a Gamebox 2.0 article where you can see what games you've been playing this month. And all the regular stuff is up there as well. So head over to the site, check all that stuff out. And so for Chris, I'm Zach, and we will see you next week for more Everything Action. Head to www.everythingaction.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at EVAction, on Facebook by searching for Everything Action, and follow us on Instagram at everything.action. You can also subscribe and get more episodes on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.